guys, it's Mandy with the Speaking Wife podcast, and we are actually back for episode 2 with a very special guest, Keith Cherry, who, if y'all have not listened to episode 1, this is my dad, and we're talking about grief and trying to process your way through grief. If you haven't listened to episode 1, I would really, really encourage you to go do that. We covered the first 2 questions that I had for him in episode 1, and yes, it did take us the full 30 minutes to talk about 2 questions, but that's because there's a lot to unpack with grief, and it's just not a one-size-fits-all situation. So the way we had ended the last episode, I had him explain an analogy that he uses often where he's talking about coming to a specific exit, if I can get my words out, a specific exit in the road. If you're traveling down the highway, you can't take the exit before you get to the exit. So how does that apply to grief? I want you to explain that one more time, Dad.
The well-meaning people, and if you remember, I paused before and said bold print, italicized, well-meaning, they really do want to help you get through the grief. And I said that I had actually went through it when I had Thanksgiving and Christmas just ahead of me. And, you know, people will say, well, you need to stay with it. You need to get right back on the horse. You need to do all of that. Well, all of us don't get back on the horse at the same time.
That's right.
And we may not ride a horse the next time. We may choose a mule. But I tell people where they can extend their appreciation for the people that are trying to be so kind, that it's like, I will be able to do that one day, but I'm not at that exit yet. And what that means is, I use the street ill as my example, and I said, if I want to get on that street, I have to get to the exit. Mm-hmm. I can't just say, okay, well, I'm going over to Yale now. I'll drive through the ditch. Mm-hmm. I'll hit a building. I'll go through a fence.
Yeah.
And you can stop and tell people, I appreciate it. And I genuinely do. They mean well, but I'm not at that exit. Mm-hmm. You're trying to help me go through a ditch, a fence, and hit a building.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be more damage doing it that way.
Right.
If I can take my time, then I can get there safely.
You're going to tear up your, figuratively, your emotional car.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That just makes so much sense. And also, I might should wait to mention this, but you know me, it popped into my head, so I'll say it. Another analogy that you use is the roller coaster. I love that analogy because the hard days feel like the only days, if I can say it that way. When you're in a very hard day, there's nothing quite as heavy as the feeling that that will always be that way. You'll always feel that way. It'll always be hard. It'll always be discouraging and depressing. And when you talk about the roller coaster, I like that because you apply that to that as well with the grief and with other things in life, but with the grief.
Well, there's actually a couple of different things with the roller coaster. One of the things, and I like to explain so people don't think we're just trying to tear it, because you will meet people that are very, very strong in what I'm fixing to cover, and we're not out to try to tear that down for the sake of tearing down their belief system.
Mm-hmm.
But people believe there are stages, and oversimplifying, that's actually like if someone's dying, that's what they go through.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, one of the dangers of you feeling that way is that, okay, I've already covered that stage. Mm-hmm. Why am I in that stage again? Well, the griever or the one that's left behind or whoever, you know, is going through the process, you don't have stages. You're all over the place all the time. And so that's hence where the name roller coaster comes from.
Yeah.
It's like if you try to think, well, okay, that today I'm angry, I'll never be angry again. It's not going to happen. And this is the part that Mandy was wanting. I tell everybody, no roller coaster stays at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extremely important for people. I've even just nearly like stood in the mirror and reached out and took myself by the shoulders, so to speak, and said, you won't always feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tell myself that. To me, if you know that, then it helps you. It's like, okay, this is my dip time. There'll be a climb time and all of that. But grievers go through a roller coaster because they're the one, and this is being, you know, too oversimplified, but you'll get what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. They're the ones left behind that are grieving. You know, like later we'll talk about all the wonderful things that people say that are supposed to be helping, but like, they're in a better place. Well, that's great, but I'm still here.
100%, you know? Yes.
You know, because you're grieving with your heart, you're not grieving with your head.
And it's always, like you said earlier, once again, in all bold capitalized letters, it's the well-meaning people. The people mm-hmm. that hate you don't try to comfort you, but the people that love you sometimes try to comfort you and end up, they throw you an anchor at a swim meet. It's not helpful. Like, that's not what we need here. And I fight that so much because I am very much a loud mouth and I have an opinion about everything, and silence is hard for me. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to just sit there.
Another inherited trait.
So I try to come up with something to say, and that was another thing that was helpful about going through the grief and recovery process and going through the classes, was I learned to just be like, sometimes you just need to be with somebody. Sometimes they don't actually need you to do anything or to give them platitudes or whatever, but there's one story that I remember you telling us growing up about the little girl. And she was pretty close to her, I believe it was an elderly neighbor, and the neighbor ended up losing her son or something along those lines, and the little girl was very young but kept telling her mom she wanted to go. I want to go check on my friend. And the mom was worried she was going to be in the way and she was going to disrupt things, and so she kept telling her, no, you know, you need to stay here, and she just kept on and on, but she's my friend, I want to go check on my friend. So her mom finally gave in.
She's like 4 years old or something.
Yeah, very small. And the mom finally gave in and let her go and was just, you know, wringing her hands nearly the whole time, worried about what this little girl was going to do. So when she got back home, she asked her, you know, well, what did you do? What did you say? And the way that I remember it is you said, the little girl just said, I didn't say anything. I just got in her lap and we cried together.
Yeah.
And that makes me cry, just because sometimes that's all you need. The words are not helpful. And I'll have to tell myself that a lot because I'm a words person. And sometimes the words are not helpful, but the being there for someone. Someone that was very important to us passed away several years ago. And I couldn't help in any other way besides be at the house and do the laundry while the wife was handling the arrangements for the husband. And that's all I did. I didn't have any great words of wisdom or anything. And I didn't feel like it was that big of a deal, but I was doing the laundry and answering the phone because people were calling the home phone. And so that's all I did. And she expressed later what a big deal that was, just to come home and just know that I hadn't been with her. I hadn't had my arm around her. I had, you know, wasn't saying anything great, but I was just doing the laundry and she didn't come home to the laundry. It was really simple. And I would rather come up with something really inspirational to say and, you know, write something beautiful. And sometimes people just need that presence of like, I'm here. I'm not going to force you to that exit yet, but I am here while we're working our way there. But I was trying to make sure I stay on task. I have a hard time with that. But what is some of the most unhelpful? We're kind of touching on it already. But what's some of the most unhelpful things to do when someone is grieving? If I'm not the one grieving, but someone else is that's close to me, what should I not be doing?
Well, I was telling Mandy I tried to find the statistics, so I'm telling you that I probably don't have this exactly right, but the point will still be here. I remember hearing this years ago before I'd ever even went through the grief and recovery course, that the person speaking at the Winter Memorial that I ended up speaking at years later, he said that they asked grievers, what would you like for someone to do? And they said, let me talk about my loss. Mm. And it was like in the 90s. I'm going to throw out like a 96. That's probably wrong. But it was in the mid-90s. And then they ask people who weren't grieving, what do you do to help the griever? And they said, oh, don't talk about it. Mm. And it was like in the mid-90s as well. And I remember him pausing and saying, do we have a breakdown here?
And just so everybody that is, you know, very young that's listening to this, he's not talking about the 1990s. You're talking about like the 96.
Percentage.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I have a 15-year-old who reminds me constantly that I was born in the 1900s, so I have to clarify often. So it was like 96% of people were just let me talk, and 96% of people were saying, oh, just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
We just don't touch on it. So do you feel like that we can have a tendency to shut people down because it makes us uncomfortable when they start talking about what they're grieving?
Well, the reason why that we don't want to talk to people that are grieving is because we're scared of ourselves and we're scared of what we'll do to them.
Mm.
There's a saying that says less is more.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, and I didn't get an hour and a half from that person, but I tell you, I can take you to where I was standing. I can, all of it. I remember all of it
mm-hmm.
when I was going through one of the most horrible times in my life. And they took my hand, made sure they made eye contact with me, and they said, "We're in your corner." Mm. They spoke volumes. What would that be? "We're in your corner." Four words. And I've never forgot it. Yeah. And I watch, anytime I see anything now, I've got, it's kind of like me teasing about a spiritual application for everything. When I do the same thing with the grief and recovery process. And when I'm watching a video or seeing something in life, I'll try to pick up on things that, you know, run parallel to what we're trying to help people with. And different times I'll hear them, they say, "Will you just sit with me?" Mm. And they sat in silence. Yeah. Don't try to sound like you've got lofty, what do they call it? Lofty platitudes, you know, or whatever. And it's like, well, like when someone has went through divorce, they'll say, "Well, there's more fish in the sea." Well, that's not helpful. Mm. You know, even if you felt like that the person was or wasn't good for me, I'm still grieving that loss, whatever. When people lose children, they'll say, "You can have more children."
Oh, my goodness.
Whether you've lost, you know, I always stress when I'm talking to people, I say, "Is this your first one," or whatever, and I'm very, very quick to tell them, it's just as painful either way.
Yes.
And the only reason why I even ask that is sometimes, if you've got other children,
yes,
you're forced to get your mind on other things. Yes. But if it's your first and only child, then you have nothing, you know, you're just sitting there thinking about it. But don't tell people they could have more children. That doesn't help. And I could go on and on and on, and, you know, with different things. And why that doesn't work is you grieve with your heart, not your head.
Yes.
So you're trying to give, it's trying to match two things, and it's apples to oranges. Mm-hmm. You're talking to them from your head, they're talking to you from their heart.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I remember them talking about in the grief and recovery. I've laughed about it because I still do this. I'm very much a mom, and I think I belonged in, like, in the 80s mom category somewhere because when my boys say, you know, "I fell."
And that's the 1980s, exactly, not 80%.
Not 80%. I'm not 80% of a mom. I'm 100% of a mom. But whenever my boys are having a rough time, I am definitely the mom that's going to be like, "I just made brownies." You know, let's think about the brownies. But in the grief and recovery program, they talk about that, how we're kind of trained. "Oh, did your puppy get run over? We'll go buy a new puppy." So we're going to stop grieving. We're going to not think about
this. Replace the loss is what they call it. Yeah.
And so there, you know, there's a line with that. They talk about us covering things up with food, which I get really poochy lipped about. I don't have to take that. You know, I feel like they're.
Oh, I would never be guilty of that.
No. What did you say one day? You said you're living proof. You don't have to die in anorexic.
Or when I have a loss, I said, some people don't want to eat. I just get a pillow and a blanket and move into the refrigerator.
Yes, I have actually wanted to stand near to the people that were grieving and stopped eating in case it was contagious. Because I don't want to make light of their loss, but I'm like, how? That is one of my stirbs, like we talked about in the last episode. The short-term energy relieving behaviors. I think I got all of them.
You did it. Yeah.
So I got the acronym. One of mine is definitely food. And so I know that's a line we have to watch. And they talk about that, how you can't just replace, you're not going to ever actually satisfy the grieving aching with food or with shopping or with staying busy like I would prefer. You know, we'll just run fast enough and it'll never catch up with us. And it never works that way. And so when you're dealing with someone who's grieving, you don't want to shut them down, and you don't want to try to sound like you have it all together or you have perfect words if you don't. Just being there is helpful. But when you're the one grieving, what's something that's not helpful?
I think that I'm pausing because I'm trying to remember. Manny's going to sit there and laugh because I do this sometimes. I remember one time when I was writing something about, I wrote a poem about friends, and I said, a friend is someone who will always assist, but at the same time will never insist.
Mm.
You know, it always sounds like I'm leaving the subject, but you'll get it. When I answer the phones, when I worked at, well, still work at Floor Haven, but one of the first times I worked there, when I was answering the phones, they told me something. They said, adjust your volume to whatever the person in that calls in.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an older person and they're talking real loud, you need to talk real loud.
Mm-hmm.
If there's somebody talking real soft, they don't need you to scream. Don't scream. Adjust your volume to whatever that they are. Well, I encourage people to do that. You know, be perceptive. If they're like wanting to talk. And a lot of times when they say they don't want to talk, if you try to make them talk, then they'll dig their heels in the dirt when they really want to talk. But if you just back off and say, well, I'll just be glad to sit here and, you know, we'll look at the sunrise or, you know, whatever. The reason why I even center in on that is, you know, once again, everything is being viewed through a lens of grief and recovery or my ministry. And I saw somebody just unleash one day on Facebook because somebody had called on Mother's Day and was very, very, the person was very, very upset. And they said, I know that she's gone. I don't need you calling me every year to remind me. And, you know, that was their feelings. And so they have a right to have that. And I'm very, very emphatic about that. The only thing that ever worried me is the people that saw that, that were thinking, well, I need to call so-and-so, or I need to call my friend or whatever. They're like, oh, I guess that's the wrong thing to do. Statistically, that's the exception and not the rule. And I want you to get, I'm always so worried about this, I want you to get what I'm trying to say. If you're one of those people that you don't want, then we'll be perceptive. This is back to answering your question. We'll be perceptive. We'll back off. We'll give you your space. That's what you need. But don't expect it to be that way with everyone else. Someone else is sitting there by their phone saying, I wish somebody cared enough to even give me a call. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. And it's a two-part deal because I wanted to talk about what's not helpful when we're dealing with someone that is grieving, that we love that person and we want to help. But also, if you're the one grieving, it's what there are things that I've done to sabotage myself when I'm grieving. And that's also something I want to talk about, is what is unhelpful to yourself. And when you were talking about adjusting your volume, one of my instant thoughts was doing that to yourself when you're broken. And I tend to be very harsh with myself, like, get up. It's time to get up. You know, you have things to do. If you were a real woman, you wouldn't be this sad. If you were a good mom, you wouldn't be struggling this much. If you were a good wife, you know, especially this one. If you were really a Christian, you would feel joy. Well, joy's not a feeling. And the older I get, the more I'm learning these things. But I have sabotaged myself when I was grieving or when I do grieve, because it's not, you know, we're going to grieve throughout life. It's part of life. But I've sabotaged myself. So whenever you're giving someone who is grieving advice on how to handle themselves, what would you say?
I think this is coming at it maybe from the wrong direction, but I try to go with whatever I feel when the person's asking me the question. It always sounds like, once again, I've left the subject. Mandy's used to it, but all the listeners probably aren't. Sometimes part of what you do to sabotage yourself is give yourself too much time to think. Sometimes that's appropriate, and sometimes you need to get off the world. I've told people there were times in my life I felt like I could sing Patsy Cline's Stop the World and Let Me Get Off and Get Anointed. You know, sometimes you need that. But there are other times, if you're an overthinker, I try to be very, very careful. You'll find out privacy and confidentiality is extremely important to me. And so I try to do this where nobody, the person may figure it out, but nobody else would have any idea who I'm talking about. There's somebody that's extremely intelligent, a very extremely intelligent person. And I was shocked to find out, with how successful I feel like that person is, one of the greatest dangers of that person, I'm trying not to even get into gender, of that person traveling alone is the time by their self. Okay, you know, give yourself a minute. And if you see that this is heading down the wrong word, turn it. You know, we live in a technological age, and even with somebody so challenged as me, you've got the world as an option. Turn on XM radio, turn on a talk show, turn on, you know, whatever. You know, if you're one of these people that can hook up YouTube to your phone, pull something up on that. Don't, once again, I always fear I'm answering the wrong question or the wrong way. I was astounded going back to that person that it's like, a couple of things there. That you find out when you go through the grief and recovery process. You know, it's like young people say, well, when I get old, the devil will never fight me. And the old people say, oh, you have no idea. And people that are extremely successful, if they were vulnerable and they would tell you the demons they fight, you would be astounded. So don't, make sure you monitor yourself. You know, and don't allow yourself to do what's not helping. In the same way you don't want to do it to someone else, like you're just asking, don't do it to yourself.
I'm watching the time, you don't worry.
I remember, this is kind of a side issue, but I this is what people tend to walk away with. I've been surprised at all of the analogies Mandy's remembered today. I do that when I'm alone. And I remember one day that, and I usually use this in a spiritual sense, but it'll be applicable either way, but I was riding along and the devil brought something to my mind that was very painful. And I sat there and chewed on it for a little bit and I thought, this is crazy. And so I went to something else. And before long, here we were again, same bad taste in my mouth. And I think that was about three times. And y'all are going to laugh your head off and it's okay. I'm such a visual and everybody that knows me is used to it. But I finally pulled over in the parking lot. I can tell you which parking lot it
and
was.
And you were all alone.
Yeah, were in the car. I was in my truck all alone, 41st and Garnett, between the Sonic and whatever the grocery store is there. And I got out, and I was so upset about it, I thought, I don't care what they think, I'm going to get relief. I got out of my truck. I walked over to the passenger side, and I opened the door, and I said, you have rode with me long enough. And it was amazing. After that, it made the difference. Anyway, I think you have another question.
Yes. No, I was just going to say that I tend to layer guilt on top of whatever feeling I'm feeling. I will feel guilty for feeling that feeling, which is super helpful, you know, and really helps you get out of that place where you're at. And one time I was listening to it was a podcast, I believe it was a Focus on the Family episode, which that podcast, oh my goodness, I started listening to that probably 10 years ago. It was so helpful. But there was a lady on there that was talking about a book she had written, and they got on the subject of prayer. And she was talking about praying for herself. And she said she struggled to pray for herself because she remembers all of her flaws and all the reasons why God shouldn't help her. All of the things that she's done wrong, all of her shortcomings, all of her stumblings, all of that. And she said she actually started to pray for herself in the third person, like she would pray for a friend. Because we have no trouble praying for our friends. I believe that God...
You can't see me shaking my head, but every single thing she's saying...
Yes, like the
head... Yes, yes, up and down, not back and forth.
She said she would pray for herself like she would a close friend, because she would have so much faith for her friends. And she could just, God's going to do this for you. God can do anything, you know. And then when she would pray for herself, she'd be like, now I know that I'm not worth anything. And we're not supposed to feel like we're better than God, or, you know, there's this happy medium that we need to find. But she was going too far the other direction. Like a child coming to their parent that's starving but doesn't believe they deserve to be fed, kind of thing. And that's something that I actually started to do. And during that phase of life, and like I said, it was about 10 years ago, because I struggled to even pray for myself, and I needed him. I needed his help. I needed the grace and the mercy and all of the things that he brings. And I would say, you know, God, Mandy's really tired. She's been processing a lot. She can't process it anymore. Mandy needs a minute. You know, can you send Mandy a break? Can you send Mandy, like you would say, a telegram?
Yep.
Can you breathe on
with
Mandy
her name
today?
On it.
Yes. And I feel like that when we do that, we remember who we actually are. And no matter what we're grieving or what we're trying to process, the grace that we would extend to someone else needs to be the grace we're willing to extend to ourselves. And once again, life is, I feel like there's a happy medium, like the Bible says, that everything to be done in decency and in order. I can't be so gracious to myself that I never get out of bed. There is going to come a point when I have to get up. But I also can't be so brutal that I never lay down. Like, we have to find that line. What is helping me to breathe and move on? And my automatic reaction is to be kind of cynical about things. And especially when it comes to me, not with anybody else. I'll be very gracious with anybody else. But I remember the very first birthday where Grandma was not here and her birthday rolled around. And I was struggling so much. My precious Grandma was important to me in ways I can't even truly explain. But I was standing outside on my front porch because I had basically been crying all day and I was trying to pull myself together. And I'm standing outside on the front porch and this beautiful butterfly in the middle of July, this beautiful blue butterfly lands on my shoulder.
Wow.
And my first thought was, oh my goodness, thank you, Lord. And immediately my next thought was, that's dumb. That's dumb. He did not send you a butterfly. That's ridiculous. And then very quickly, the third thought, or you talk about God kind of smacking you upside the head. The third thought was, you don't think I control the butterflies?
Right.
And it humbled me very quickly. And I was just standing there crying, and I chose to be thankful for the gesture of grace that I felt like he had just shown me, because it was very hot. There weren't butterflies just flitting around everywhere. And there weren't any other butterflies. It was one blue butterfly landed on my shoulder and then was gone. And I felt like a little message that God sent to me that was like, I know it's hard, but I do see where you're at, and I'm right here. And it's not always going to feel like it does right now. And that's something that, like you talk about, standing in front of the mirror and kind of grabbing yourself by the shoulders. I've said that to so many friends where I'm like, it's not always going to be hard to smile.
That's right.
It's not always going to feel this way. So I can't believe we run out of time this fast every time. But we're already closing back in on 30 minutes. So if you could say one thing to encourage someone to go to the grief and recovery classes there right now, the one that you participate with is in Broken Arrow, but mm-hmm. there are several locations all across the country that do it.
Right.
How would you kind of summarize and encourage someone to maybe look into that for themselves?
Well, the one thing I try to encourage people is to go the first night, mm-hmm. because you don't have to sign up. There's absolutely no obligation. You can go and then walk away and say, I can't do this right now. This mm-hmm. is not for me. My schedule doesn't permit it, whatever. But you don't know till you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first night, Doug is very, very good. He's extremely passionate about this. He does a very good job of explaining to you what will happen in the weeks ahead. So I hope this would be answering the question. The first thing I would say is go and find out
mm-hmm.
and listen. And then you can actually go on and find reviews. I'm going mm-hmm. blank here all of a sudden, but I believe if you just go to Floral Haven, you can end up seeing if people
yes.
have commented, because we encourage them to do that. But
they have a grief and recovery tab, I believe, on
yeah.
the website.
And so I always feel like I'm oversimplifying, but this very next one, I don't know how quick that this will be aired, but our next one is going to be the last Tuesday. I'm thinking about what
Tuesday.
Day it is.
Mm-hmm.
The last Tuesday in September.
Okay.
Go and find out.
So I'm going to say the date on that just to make sure we've said it out loud. The last Tuesday in September is September 26th, and that's the first night. That's the orientation night.
Right.
Okay. So if they wanted to come and just sit there and listen, you don't have to sign anything or...
Well, and even if, and you think, well, I can go then, but I can't do all 8 weeks. We're
mm-hmm.
going to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you know you're not going to be there the majority of the time, then
yeah.
I wouldn't do that. But if you're only going to miss like one, maybe at the most two sessions,
mm-hmm.
we can send what we call the homework with you.
Okay.
And we do it all the time. Sometimes people have even gotten stuff emailed to them and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you get into the first few weeks and say, I've made a mistake, I can't do it, there'll be other sessions like our next session. After this, we won't do one until the last Tuesday in March.
Okay.
But even if you go and you're like, I've made a mistake, I can't do this right mm-hmm. now, it's not going to hurt anything, and you'll still have a grasp
yes.
of what will happen.
Yes. Well, I really appreciate that. And I kind of wanted to end on one of the things that Brother Doug Hash said the very first orientation deal that I went to. He said, you know, we believe God can do anything. And I do. I'm living proof. I've got three boys because God can do anything. But when we have a flat tire on the side of the road, do we sit down and pray for God to fix it, or do we get the tools out?
Right.
And we get the tools out. God can air up that tire. I believe he can.
And we may pray for the Lord to help us.
Absolutely.
But we have to do
yes,
our part.
Yes, Lord, send a breeze, because it's 178 degrees. But we get the tools out. And that's what I want to do. That's what I want this podcast to be for people that don't have time right now to maybe be in counseling all the time or to go read a book all the time. I went through a span of probably 7 years where I couldn't read a book because my children wouldn't let me. Like, mm-hmm. the interruptions were insane. But I want to encourage people to find the tools, because you don't always have to feel the way that you're feeling. Every day doesn't have to feel like your head's under mud. I mean, sometimes underwater doesn't even cut it. Sometimes you feel like you're under mud. So anyway, Dad, thank you so much for being here again.
Thank you for having me.
And maybe this will be a repeat thing. Y'all have to let me know if you want to hear some more from my super wisdomous father. He's always got something to say.
But today I'm here.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll invite him back another time, the other father. No. Thank you so much for tuning in for episode 2. I hope y'all have a great week. Thank you so much for joining us for part 2 of When You Are Grieving. If you'd like to know more about the classes that we were talking about, you can search for Grief Recovery Method and that will bring up an option for you to click on their website where you can find more information about the in-person classes and even some online options. Remember that the in-person classes are free with only the purchase of the book to go along with the 8-week course, and the online classes have a cost to them. If you have any other questions, don't hesitate to reach out and we'll do our best to get answers for you. The next class that is reconvening here in Tulsa, Oklahoma is going to start on September 26th. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode. As always, I hope I've encouraged your heart and given you the chance to smile today. I would love to hear from you on Instagram at the Speaking Wife Podcast or through email at speakingwifepodcast@gmail.com. God bless. Have a great week.